Welcome to the Resolving Violence Podcast, created to deliver current Canadian prairie-based research on violence and abuse to service providers, people with lived experience, and the general public. I'm Jordan. And if you'd like to learn more about factors that influence violence and the ways you can address them, let's get started.
In today's episode, I'll be talking with Alexandra Seidenberg, who is an incoming assistant professor of psychology at the Royal Military College of Canada. She completed her PhD in applied social psychology at the University of Saskatchewan and served as a postdoctoral researcher at McGill University. Her research tends to focus on forensic topics and particularly sexual offending. Outside of her forensic work, she has a growing line of research focused on stigma related to tattooed mental health professionals. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome, Alexandra. It is so great to have you on today to share your research. I'm so excited to hear more about it. Can you just start us off with an overview of your research on victim body weight and perception of sexual violence cases? You know, what did you do? What were your findings and any major takeaways?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited to talk about this project. So this project actually started when I was back in my master's, and we wanted to know how victim body weight affected perceptions of victims and perpetrators of sexual violence, and particularly sexual coercion. So what we did, it was an online survey. We had people come join our link online, and when they did that, they would read through our consent form, make sure they actually wanted to participate. And then they'd be presented with a little vignette or a story that depicted a case of sexual violence among two dating partners. In our story, they were named Susan and Michael. And Susan was presented as the victim and Michael was the perpetrator. So depending on the vignette or the little story that they were presented, they were either presented with Susan, our victim, being described as being thin or being described as being overweight. And then they were asked to fill out a couple standardized questionnaires about their attitudes towards people with larger bodies, as well as a measure of rape myth acceptance. And then we had some questions about the case. So what we ended up finding is that we did see a difference based on the victim weight. When our victim was presented as thin, there tended to be more negative attitudes towards our perpetrator. But when the victim was presented as overweight, people tended to excuse the perpetrator more and place more blame on the victim. So we did see some differences there.
Remind me, this is with female victims, correct?
Yes. So that main study was with female victims. We did do a follow-up with male victims, and we don't see those same differences based on body weight. And there are a couple reasons that we think that might be happening. And one is that there is a difference between genders on how we consider body weight. So for women in Western society, we often conflate being overweight with being unattractive. And that has some important implications for women in dating situations and sexual situations. Women tend to be viewed as less experienced, less sexually desirable, and less likely to be the target of attention when they're overweight. Whereas for overweight men with dating relationships, we don't see those differences as much. And overweight men seem to be regarded as being generally the same as average weight men.
Super interesting. One thing I was curious about too is if you looked at this, were there any differences with sexual orientation? Like, I'm not sure if you looked at like female to female or male to male relationships.
So in the study with our female victims, we didn't look at any same-sex couples or any other sexual orientations. But with men, we did, and we didn't find that there was a difference.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to ask about is, what are some common rape myths that the general population might be aware of or even endorse? And what would be like the corrections of them or a more accurate way of viewing things?
Sure. So it does depend on the gender of the victim. So there's a set of rape myths that apply to women, and there's a set of rape myths that apply to men generally. Yeah. There's a little bit of overlap, but for the most part, two separate kind of camps. For women, many of the rape myths tend to blame the victim because of a perceived provocation on the victim's part. So it tends to be stuff like the victim was wearing a short skirt, or the victim went home with a man and she should expect something to happen. So a lot of it hinges on the victim's behavior as some sort of a provocation. Whereas for men, rape myths tend to be more tangled up in our views of men and how they're supposed to be strong and able to fight off an attacker, or that they are always ready, willing, and able to have sex, so they can't be sexually assaulted at all. They should just be happy for any attention they receive.
Yeah. I find it really interesting that you are doing that research on male victims. I think it's obviously a pretty common discussion that men can't be victims, and I think it's really great. You know, I think there's a trend that we're seeing in violence research that we need to be focusing on the people that are missing in violence research, whether that be men or, you know, indigenous populations. I think it's really great that we're starting to get to some of those groups and, you know, have their voices be heard more.
For sure. And we actually, as kind of a follow-up to these studies, have some research planned looking at trans and non-binary individuals as well, because we actually don't really know anything about rape myths that apply to those groups, because the way that we've looked at it in the past have been quite gendered, and we don't really know about anything that applies to people who don't fit into that binary.
So one question I always have to ask researchers, because I find it gets such interesting answers all the time, is what is something impactful you found in your research, but it might not get the same attention as other things or doesn't get asked about as frequently? Basically something that you think people should be talking about, but they just aren't.
For this particular research, I don't think there's a particular finding that's not talked about. I think weight as a factor in general isn't discussed enough. So we know it's being used out in the real world. There was a case back near 2017 in Quebec where a victim of sexual assault was actually told by a judge that she should be grateful for the attention she received because she was overweight and probably doesn't get that attention. So it's happening. People are using weight to make judgments, but we haven't really looked at it in the literature all that much. So I think just talking about weight in general and how it may impact people's views of certain cases is important and not talked about enough.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so horrible to hear, that the kind of reactions that are kind of given in these cases, like in the legal system, it's heartbreaking, really, that this is how victims are treated. It's not what you want to be dealing with when you're already going through something so difficult.
No, for sure.
Yeah. So I have to ask you another question.
Sure.
That's slightly related to my previous research on microaggressions. So in your paper on male victim body weight, one point you made was that recent research indicates that there's a shift towards more subtle expressions of rape myths. And I'm curious if you could provide some examples of what that might look like and how clinicians could identify them.
Sure. So this was actually findings from the first study where we looked at male victims. So in that study, we did give all of our participants a quantitative measure of rape myths, the updated Illinois Rape Myth Acceptance Scale. And people's endorsements on that quantitative scale were quite low. They ended up being about an average of a disagree to most questions, which if we took that at face value means people don't have very many rape myths. But unfortunately, when we looked at the qualitative responses that weren't asking about rape myths at all, it was asking about help that the victim might need, what people thought about the case, we saw a lot of rape myths in those answers. And they were more subtle than those questions that are asked on the IRMA. So rather than just having a question like, if a woman goes home with a man, she should know something is going to happen. She should expect to be assaulted, which is something that would appear on that IRMA that I think most people know they should say no to. We got a lot of responses where people were kind of hedging and saying, well, she went home with him. She could have left. Why didn't she do this? So I think maybe because we've shifted in how we view certain situations, or we've shifted in what we know is the correct way to discuss some of these things, people might not be willing to endorse those very clear statements that we see on measures like the IRMA, but that doesn't mean that those rape myths have gone away. They've maybe just shifted and changed to be a little bit more subtle in the ways that we discuss them.
Yeah, I know in my previous research on stigma and microaggressions, there's just like a general trend that I've seen that stigma in general is becoming less overt and more covert, and people tend to see that as, oh, it's going away. There's less racism, there's less sexism, stuff is getting better. And really, it's become much more subtle, but with that, there's more of a chronicity to it. So maybe you're not having these big events where it's so clear, like, yes, I'm being like stigmatized right now. It's more of like little comments every day that built up can have a much larger impact on, you know, people's well-being. I think that the better we become at being able to identify these things and, you know, even have maybe confidence isn't the right word, but the confidence to address them and correct people, you know, the better things will get, hopefully, the more we'll be able to reduce these negative beliefs. I found that super interesting. Of course, when it relates to your own research,
of course, yeah,
you make the connections.
But yeah, I agree. I think we are marching slowly towards progress, mm-hmm. but there's definitely little bits and pieces as we go that we still have to pay attention to, like the way that we shift blame or the ways in which we discuss certain things like rape myths or microaggressions or racism, because sometimes they don't fully go away. We kind of push them underground a little bit for a while before we can actually fully sweep out under the carpet.
Yeah, and I think it's like growing pains, right? You said that people are recognizing, like, I shouldn't agree with that. So I'm like, on a quantitative scale, I'm not going to say anything. Everybody's like in that stage where we're trying to, we know what's wrong, but we're not really sure what's right and yeah. acceptable. And I guess that's a goal of this podcast, is being able to help people kind of identify these things and what maybe are better ways to respond to certain situations and how we should be behaving, I guess.
Yeah.
So our last question to close us off, based on your research and your knowledge of this area, if you were to give a service provider working directly with these populations one practice that they can work toward long term and one simple thing that they can begin implementing today, what would it be?
Sure. So in the long term, I would say probably identifying and thinking about your own prejudices and prejudices that might be present. So we're all people who are steeped in culture and society, and we can't really remove ourselves from our cultural surroundings. So anti-fat bias exists in the world. It seems to have an impact on how both perpetrators and victims or survivors of sexual violence are perceived. And we want to make sure that we're identifying that that could be an issue and trying our best to mitigate that. So we want to make sure that victims or survivors who come in aren't being dismissed simply because of their weight, even if it's not something that you might have thought about initially. When a person walks into your service, you can't help but see them and perceive them, and weight is one of the things that we see or perceive. In terms of a concrete practice, I would say talking to other people about the potential for weight bias in these situations and thinking about your own biases and your own kind of background and how that might impact your service provision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really what everybody needs to be doing, not just for service providers. I think, you know, even being so encompassed in this research myself, you know, there's still always times that I'm like, oh no, I shouldn't be thinking that way. And it's always, you know, reevaluating. And one quote that, of course, I don't remember where the quote came from, but it's like your first thought isn't what matters. It's what you do next. So it's just, you know, giving yourself the grace to be like, yeah, it's okay that maybe I had that negative belief to begin with, but how am I going to address that now?
For sure. We're all people. We all have bias. I have bias. And all you can do is try your best to overcome it and to grow and expand your understandings of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. It was so awesome to talk to you and learn more about your research.
Thank you for having me. It was really great to talk about my research, and I'm happy to get the chance to talk about it and share.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Resolving Violence. If you're interested in learning more about today's guests and their research or Resolve Saskatchewan, please check the show notes below. And if what you listened to today was helpful, please consider sharing it with colleagues and on social media so we can work collectively to resolve violence. Thanks again. Until next time.